Hello and welcome to the August 2014 edition of the Kaspersky Daily Monthly News Podcast. I'm here, as I always am, with Chris Brook from Threat Post. How you doing, Chris Brook?
Greetings, Brian Donahue. Good to be here.
So, as August generally does, we started the month off with Black Hat and DEF CON. We've covered Black Hat pretty thoroughly here on the Kaspersky Daily, and I would say very thoroughly on Threat Post. The event was slightly different this year in that it was held at Mandalay Bay rather than Caesars for the first time. There was definitely a shift in topics. So I've only been twice. You've been once, right, Chris?
I've only been once.
Yeah. So I feel like in the past, and you're probably a pretty good barometer for this, the talks used to be mostly like really wonky enterprise stuff. Can you, certify that?
Yeah, I concur.
Yeah, so now it seems there seems to be a shift moving more toward consumer-oriented research. So now you're going to see briefings on, increasingly covering mobile, medical device security, connected homes and hackable home security, and, just in general other consumer device security research. That said, you still get plenty of heady briefings about obscure holes in enterprise-only software, so if that's your thing, you can still find it there. But to briefly synopsize what I saw, Charlie Miller and Chris Valasek basically redid their now very famous car hacking demo. They are now saying that they can remotely exploit these cars, whereas before they were physically plugged into them. They're also developing a defensive technology that could block these attacks, so it will be interesting to watch where that goes moving forward. I also sat in on a discussion of the legal pitfalls of security research and basically realized that it's pretty hard out there for these security researchers. And it was funny to sit through that and then go to more briefings and think about it like through the prism of legality. So you're like watching these guys hack these computers, and it's like, I wonder if this is even legal. And I was actually just reading the Wikipedia page for DEF CON, and it's like, back in the day at DEF CON, people used to get arrested there all the time. So there's probably,
pretty shady stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's shady stuff, but the law is even more shady than the stuff that's actually being done. And then the last thing that I wanted to mention from Black Hat, actually the second to last thing, is I went to a roundtable discussion on the security of embedded and connected medical devices, and basically, the way these things communicate, the communication protocols on these things are incredibly vulnerable, but the devices themselves are quite safe. So the guy was saying that essentially it's safer to wear an embedded or to use a connected medical device than it is not to. So the communications vulnerabilities, are bad, but you got to take the good with the bad. Just one thing from DEF CON. I didn't go to DEF CON. You didn't go to DEF CON. But that took place earlier this month as well. There was a router hacking contest there, and the guys that won, Craig Young and Ian Turner from Tripwire, found nine in a handful of popular router brands, and they only took a couple of hours to do it because they figured like a whole bunch of other people were going to find the same bugs. So they didn't want to commit too much time to it. Other people didn't find the same bugs, and they won. And then the last thing, it's only fair for us to give Yahoo some credit. Their chief information security officer was there touting their new security posture. We've given them a lot of flack in the past, so it's good to hear that they're in the process of implementing end-to-end encryption by the end of the year and some other good security stuff like perfect forward secrecy, which is a good transition into some of the other cryptography stuff from this month, Chris.
Yeah, let's go full crypto here. I feel like it's kind of refreshing to see all of these kind of like dozens of sites and entities that have been locking down everything. Keywords, data center links, email services, all in the last couple months. Facebook announced this month that 95% of outbound notification emails are now encrypted by, like you mentioned, perfect forward secrecy and certificate validation. Amazon CloudFront, which is the company's content delivery system, did the same thing a few weeks back, turned on perfect forward secrecy, which isn't the easiest thing to say, perfect forward secrecy.
Nor is it the easiest thing to explain.
It's really difficult. I can't do it here. But they also added a bunch of other tweaks to improve its SSL connections, which is good. Google also did something interesting this month that's sort of in line with this as well. it apparently now takes into account whether a site uses HTTPS as part of its search ranking. This is especially intriguing from a security standpoint because it hints that Google cares about secure sites, as they should, and how a secure site can be is relative to its value. The company now even gives tips on how to switch to HTTPS and help its ratings. So not a bad thing there.
Yeah, I think that's a really strong move. There were a lot of patches this month, lots of fixes. Google Chrome had, I think, 2 patch updates fixing like 75 bugs together or something along those lines. Apple also had some fixes, so you want to update those bad boys if you haven't already. However, the real story is of Microsoft's patching fiasco. So Microsoft shipped out its standard Patch Tuesday updates earlier this month. It was a pretty normal load with what has now become that normal cumulative security update for Internet Explorer and other stuff. Unfortunately, one of the patches, MS-14-045, caused a small number of computers to crash and blue screen. So, you know, for most of the month, it's the 28th of August right now as we're recording this, users just didn't have that patch because Microsoft pulled it. So on Wednesday, which is yesterday, the company released a new version of that patch that won't break your computer. So you're going to want to make sure that's installed because it fixes an important rated kernel bug that could let an attacker take over your machine. So why don't we bring that into some of the APT research from this month, Chris?
Earlier this month, it's actually right at the beginning in the thick of Black Hat and DEF CON, Kaspersky announced that researchers had found the predecessor to Turla, something they call Epic. Turla, to recap, was a cyber espionage campaign from earlier this year, March, I believe, that targeted government agencies in the US, Ukraine, UK. This month, they discovered Epic, which alongside Turla, utilized 50-plus hacked computers to infect 100-plus sites. The APT wound up using 2 0 days against XP and Windows Server 2003, alongside an Adobe Reader 0 day. Both those combined to exploit victims and steal data. One of this month's other big attacks revolved around community health systems. Reuters was the first to report here that Chinese hackers, known as APT-18, this is sort of their code name, to Mandiant, who's working to investigate the hack, were able to make off with the social security numbers and personal data of a whopping 4.5 million patients. That's a lot of people. Experts claim the attackers used, they usually target critical aerospace and defense information, but in this case, were likely after medical device development info. Regardless, it's likely the information will be later leveraged for China's gain.
So, from APT stuff to malware, and sort of back to Yahoo for a second, I wrote an interesting story earlier this month about a remote access Trojan that was receiving command and control instructions from Yahoo Mail. A researcher from the German firm GData also said that the authors of the malware could easily adapt it for Gmail or other popular webmail providers. So right now it's getting commands from Yahoo, but it could easily get them from Gmail or any number of other webmail providers. This is significant because the malware can evade intrusion detection systems because it seems to be legitimate traffic coming from Yahoo or some other webmail. Another novel virus is a new rogue antivirus sample that popped up this month, which is interesting because all the research and all the statistics seem to show that rogue antivirus are on a serious downfall because, just detection systems have gotten much better at blocking them. This one, though, is called Defru. And once it's on a host machine, so you have to become infected first, but once it's on there, it has a list of popular websites that if a user visits one of them, the malware redirects them to that well-known PC Defender page, that fake antivirus that most readers of the Kaspersky Daily will probably be familiar with. So this fake PC Defender website then runs a fake scan, which detects a bunch of fake malware and essentially asks for payment to get it removed from your computer. From there to data breaches real quick. So one of the big ones this month was AB Acquisition LLC got popped. That breach was quiet, but it affected like 1,000 stores. So AB Acquisition Limited Liability Corporation owns Albertsons, the famous grocery store chain. So the stores not only included Albertsons brands like Albertsons, Shaw's, Acme, Jewel Osco, and Star Markets, but it also, the breach also affected super value brands such as Shoppers, Cub Foods, Farm Fresh, Hornbacher's, which I may be pronouncing wrong and I've never heard of, and Shop and Save. So the connection here is because Super Value very recently owned Albertsons and sold it to this AB acquisition company for like, I can't remember, some billions, $3 billion, I think. The breach exposed credit and debit card information. I didn't get much information from the spokespeople at those companies about how it happened. But, you know, I went ahead and changed out my credit card because I noticed that the local Shoppers Food Warehouse was affected. So you might want to go on to Super Value or AB Acquisition LLC's website and check out the stores affected. There was also a breach of the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Agency. I think you wrote about that, right, Chris?
Yeah, the NRC was hacked 3 times over the past 3 years. They did a OIG, Office of the Inspector General report from NextGov, and they found that, they didn't find too much concrete information, but they found that a unnamed foreign country was behind the hack, and that they likely were able to garner usernames and passwords of people there. It was a phishing attack, spear phishing, so yeah. Pretty general, pretty vague, but
vague, not but good, not unexpected.
No, and also not good if you're dealing with nuclear reactor locations and where they recycle stuff like that. So
yeah, not the kind of stuff that you want to be having hacked on a regular basis.
No. UPS was also hacked too. If you were one of the customers at one of the 51 stores that were hit with malware, it's likely that hackers now have your payment card info, email addresses, postal addresses, and names. If customers are looking for a silver lining here, it's they can take solace in that the fact that it was only 1% of the company's stores that were infected.
Then, of course, we already talked about the community health systems breach. Obviously, that affected 4.5 million patients. It affected anyone who would have been referred to or received services from physicians affiliated with community health systems in the last 5 years. It's obviously not good that social security numbers were breached, but the most interesting part of the story, as it turns out, may be that the attackers exploited the OpenSSL Heartbleed vulnerability, which very famously affected some 2/3 of the internet when it emerged in April in order to breach community health systems. If you don't know what Heartbleed is, just Google it. We don't have time to explain it again here. So while I'm still on the topic of Heartbleed, IBM released their quarterly threat intelligence report this month. There's a lot of nice stuff in there. A lot of it's really enterprise security focused. But I think probably the most interesting tidbit or piece of information from it is that across all of the clients using IBM's managed security services, they're seeing 7,000 attacks targeting Heartbleed every single day. And they also claim that half of the internet remains vulnerable to Heartbleed.
All right, then. Not good either.
No. Not at all.
Let's see. There's some late-breaking news here. This just kind of snuck in under the wire here before we turn to September. I thought it was a kind of curious move. Verizon announced this week that they're going to incorporate QR codes as a method of authentication in its Universal Identity Services portfolio. Users will have a chance to sign up for a Verizon ID, then download an app that will generate a QR code to log into certain sites. Users can pair it with a password or PIN if they'd like, but how do you feel about this, Brian? I feel like QR codes have sort of gone by in their relevance, you know?
Yeah, you could color me skeptical, though I will say that some of our friends in Europe do say that they use QR codes there, so I don't have anything but that anecdotal evidence, but, you know, who knows? I'm skeptical about it. The last thing to talk about is the PlayStation Network, which was famously hacked in 2011, went down for the weekend of the 23rd and 24th of August. A group calling itself Lizard Squad took credit for the DDoS attack that knocked the gaming platform offline. Also, very bizarrely, the group tweeted in a bomb threat to, I believe it was American Airlines, an American Airlines flight that had a top Sony executive on it. The plane was redirected and landed, though no one is commenting on whether or not the two things are related. So that's very strange. And as is always the case with these activist groups, their aim is unclear. On the one hand, they said they attacked Sony because it's being greedy and making money and not improving the PlayStation Network. But they're also tweeting a whole lot about how they would continue to DDoS Sony until the U.S. stopped launching drone strikes against a group known as the Islamic State in Iraq. So who knows what they're up to. We'll see if that folds into anything bigger. I think that's all we've got for now. As always, Chris, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Oh, no problem.
All right. Make sure you check in next month for the September edition of the Kaspersky Daily Podcast. Thanks for listening.